See how nice it is when you do things the right way?
Yes. Sorry, a different way as opposed to the right way. We had the right way for 4 years and now...
Whatever.
198 episodes.
Let's get this done. Oh, good one. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, here to assure you that Steve Bannon will not be joining us today, but...
Do you think he'd do the show?
We could try him. You never know.
I bet he'd do it.
I bet he would do it.
Yeah.
Coming up next week, Steve Bannon, for the hour.
Yeah, let's get...
all three shirts he has on.
Oh, man.
God knows what
he
else.
He is not... Well, actually, maybe he is a clothes horse. He's the original clothes horse. He wears all his clothes.
I think he's more the thing you just hang the clothes on, which is a clothes
a
horse.
A rack.
A rack. He's a clothes rack. He's definitely not coming on now.
No. That turned quickly. Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today, we will look at the man who takes everything you hate about Donald Trump and somehow makes it worse. And no, not Steve Bannon. We're talking about Jair Bolsonaro, who is now the president-elect of Brazil. And if you care about the environment or indigenous rights, that's especially bad news. And then Climate Deniers Unite, Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe and Doug Ford are teaming up to fight the carbon tax. Part of a torrent of bad news for preserving the environment this week. I was up all night, so
I'm a little cranky. This guy can do this solo.
And finally, BC's efforts to reform their provincial election system are in their most important phase, as all the ballots should be in the hands of voters now. But can any side properly articulate the pros and cons? But first, we have to start with more hate crimes. I'm always reminded when this comes up that like we started the show with a... with a hate crime, with a mass shooting, with...
Just Sweet Charlie.
Yeah.
Yeah, Charlie Hebdo.
So it's like been a, like a consistent theme on...
Sadly, yes.
On almost the 4 years we've been doing this. But yeah, so there was a trifecta last week. First, there was the pipe bombs, over a dozen pipe bombs that were sent to people who were critical of Donald Trump. Some very famous names from the former occupants of the White House to former people who worked at the White House to the three-time Academy Award-winning actor of Goodfellas and Raging Bull and Godfather 2 and The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle, to name some of Robert De Niro's greatest hits. But then there was also the shooting at a synagogue on Saturday, the Tree of Life Synagogue, where 11 were killed by someone who was clearly being motivated by, let's say, Trumpian ideals, particularly that high-profile and rich Jewish people were funding the, I don't want to call it the migrant caravan, I think refugees is a more apt description, the mass group of refugees who are moving up through Mexico from Honduras, trying to escape some very vicious circumstances down there. And then the one that hasn't been reported as much is the shooting in the Kroger's, which is a chain of grocery stores in the United States. I believe it was in Kentucky, mm-hmm. where two black men were killed by a man who originally tried to break into a black church and try to shoot up a black church, and then gave up and went to Kroger's, where he found two people of color he was able to shoot, and a white person who was able to subdue him with a gun, and his personal surprise that a white man would shoot another white man who was shooting black people. So,
yeah, his exact words were, "Whites don't kill whites." So that's why I didn't shoot him.
Yeah, that's not even a dog whistle anymore.
No. You,
yeah. Anyway, so that's the recap.
What a week.
What a week.
probably one of America's worst weeks. I did notice that the shooting at the synagogue was listed as a terrorist incident on Wikipedia,
yeah,
as opposed to just a hate crime, which it also is. All of this completely fueled by hate. It was interesting to see, because I was off for one of the days, how difficult it was for Fox and, let's say, Trump-friendly organizations to report the pipe bomb story, because it was just so blatantly obvious,
yeah,
that his inspiration his number one inspiration and probably Trump's number one fan, in a way, was Caesar Sayoc, is Caesar Sayoc. We haven't actually, I guess he's been hauled in, but there's been no hearing or anything resembling whatever yet. It doesn't matter.
I think there was a pre-hearing.
Yeah, the usual, but that's just sort of just a, so they, yes, they Your can, Honor, I understand, right?
Yeah, they can read the charges against him.
But yeah. And thankfully, he was a really lousy bomb builder.
Yeah.
But yeah, how he got all of those addresses, that's pretty industrious.
Well, I mean,
I'm not giving the guy, don't get me wrong. It's like,
that's the
if you were to sit down,
it.
Yeah, I guess that was all he did. And then there was his boss woman, I guess, on the news saying that he was a terrible person, but a good worker.
Yeah.
There was these weird kind of, that's how it all, as I said, that's not how it all works now, but it's, you know, watching mainstream media as I do versus online, because, you know, to avoid that explosion. Of course, we want things that are curated. But yeah, what? And oh my God, you know, they're so worried about this, as you mentioned, the migrant caravan or the Muslims on the block or the Jews. It's like, this is just proof positive. You should be very afraid of the middle-aged white man or the school-aged white man in your neighborhood, because, you know, public enemy number one right now is the fans of all the garbage. I guess we'll get into that a bit too in terms of what is fueling this. We've talked about it a billion times. What is the fuel to the fire?
Well, I mean, in the case of the synagogue shooting, it's like just straight up anti-Semitism. And what's worse is that it comes after a week when Donald Trump goes, "Am I a nationalist? Yeah, I'm a nationalist. I'm trying to fight the globalist over here." And I don't want to lobotomize Donald Trump's thoughts too much, but
at the same time,
someone has to have explained to him at some point. You can't say you're a nationalist.
Yeah, nationalism versus nationalist.
You can't say globalist, because globalist is the latest in a long line of whistle words.
Yes.
Because you can't say "I hate the Jews" out loud. Even like straight up anti-Semites like Steve Bannon won't say out loud, "I hate Jewish people."
No, he just wants to send his kids.
But
he'll
say, "I hate globalists." Yeah. And because Jews, quote unquote, control banking, the media, and politics, that's who the globalists are. So Donald Trump is out there saying, yeah, do I think it's George Soros? Yeah, I think so. Who could say? But, you know, maybe it's George Soros. And so, the shooter at the synagogue straight up said, like, I've heard that, you know, George Soros and other Jewish billionaires are, you know, handing out money, like, are standing there at the border of Mexico, like handing out $100 bills or something, and like bringing all these people in to
where
the country.
Did he hear it, of course,
right?
The internet, right?
Yeah,
this it's in some ways the internet seems to be the, I would say, the main fuel. The key fuel is chucking gas onto the fire. And what is, had you heard of Gab until this week?
No,
sort of this alternative channel.
It's all right.
You
Twitter,
know, sometimes
basically.
We hear about 4chan and whatnot, but Gab was under the radar until this week. And it seems this guy got most of his info and posted on Gab because it sounds like he was probably banned from other mainstream social media. And who was banned this week? Gavin McGinnis from Facebook and Twitter, I believe, or Instagram. Yeah. Instagram
seems
to be popular.
Well, Instagram's owned by Facebook, too. So
seems to be a popular.
I think if you're banned from one, you're banned from the other.
Popular alt-right posting spot these days as well.
Yeah. No, it's with Gab, it was started like sort of as a, you know what, we need more free speech in social media.
Was it started by libertarians by any chance?
Yeah. And Twitter was
the L word.
Twitter, despite the fact having very few standards that they enforce, is apparently too fascistic for these people, and so they go on and Gab, and that's where, I mean, that tweet's been quoted like, "Here I go, I'm going in," or whatever he said.
Of course, no one would see it in enough time to stop it, and of course, the other people on Gab would.
Well,
be
we
like,
know what it's one of those things where it's like,
great,
we know what
it.
He means after the fact, but he could have been going to Subway for all we know. It's like, "I'm hungry, I'm going in." Who knows? But it's not just like the Gab flies. I'm coining that term. Patent pending.
Yeah, yeah.
Patent pending.
That's about right.
But it's like Kevin McCarthy on that same day. Kevin McCarthy, if you don't know, is the House leader. He's the number two Republican in the House of Representatives. Is sending out tweets about, you know, George Soros and Tom Steyer and Michael Bloomberg buying the election for Democrats. And what do all three of those guys have in common other than being billionaires? I wonder, could it be a certain J word? I think so. And so, and to my knowledge, he hasn't deleted that tweet, Kevin McCarthy, or maybe he did delete that tweet, but not before like hundreds of people were like screen capped it. But so you have people who you wouldn't normally associate with like the white supremacist movement or white nationalism, you know, people with like actual power to do things like the leader of the House majority leader, just like putting out these like blatantly racist and anti-Semitic things. You talked about mainstream media. My infuriation this week was watching some of the mainstream media coverage. And not just CNN, which is like at the best of times infuriating, but even MSNBC. Mm-hmm. Like last Friday, Chuck Todd had Hugh Hewitt on, and Hugh Hewitt was trying to draw a straight line between Cesar Sayoc and people getting and Republican politicians getting shouted at restaurants, which is nowhere close. And,
wow, that's quite the jump.
It's quite the jump.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was before the synagogue shooting at that. But it's also it also is, you know, part of the problem today, I think, with how protest is portrayed. People think that protest shouldn't be disruptive. Well, the whole idea of protest is that it's disruptive. And so I'm not sure exactly what people like Hugh Hewitt want when people decide they're going to protest.
Yeah, well, there's disruption.
Yeah.
And then there's pipe bomb, right?
Like, right. But the two aren't similar.
No.
And then I was watching CNN on Tuesday, and Chris Cuomo, who's like one of these people who his father was a governor, his brother is a governor. So
Mario Cuomo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's not exactly from the hood, if you will, or he's not like from the street.
Right.
But he's talking about Louis Farrakhan. I'm making this false equivalency that, oh, well, Louis Farrakhan's an anti-Semite. Why haven't people on the left vote? It's like I've heard more about Louis Farrakhan this week than I've heard about Louis Farrakhan in the last 5 years. Why are you wheeling out Louis Farrakhan? Even Louis Farrakhan had to be elated because this is like the first time anyone's talked about him on CNN.
Yeah, they used to just make fun of him on Saturday Night Live on occasion, yeah. And you wouldn't hear anything.
Exactly.
Right.
So but it's this kind of stuff. Instead of focusing on,
well, he said it, so why can't? Yeah, yeah.
It's like both sides are to blame. It's like no, both sides aren't to blame. And there was a statistic that was making the rounds that if you look at domestic terrorism in the last several years, 74% is right wing, 2% of it is left wing, and then the other 21 it's mostly Islamic extremism. And you know, other forms of terror. So when you look at the numbers, 74 to 2, does 74 equal to? I'm not a mathematician, and maybe one of the mathematicians on campus can call in and tell us if this is any way uncertain. Does 74 equal to? No.
Somewhere in the world of fuzzy math.
And by the way, no one's reading Louis Farrakhan's tweets and sending pipe bombs. And no one's reading Nancy Pelosi's tweets and sending pipe bombs. And yeah, that guy who shot up the Republican baseball team last year was
Bernie Sanders. They almost referred to that.
Again, that's another false equivalency, but Bernie Sanders renounced him.
Immediately. Yeah.
And Bernie Sanders was never like on the stump somewhere going, you know who I hate? Steve Scalise. So much to really lock that guy up. I don't know. Something has to be done about that guy. That one, Bernie Sanders.
No, he doesn't tweet like that.
There's no quote of Bernie Sanders anywhere like that. Unlike Donald Trump, who's talking about fake news, and Obama did this to me, and Crooked Hillary, and Eric Holder is terrible, and you know,
all Democrats,
and
everything Obama
and, you know,
did.
Low IQ Maxine Waters, another target. Tom Steyer, on and on and on. And I want to point out too, this isn't just like sort of limited to the United States. That these are strong headwinds in Canada too.
No, we have our own. Obviously, I would say Faith Goldie and aforementioned Gavin McGinnis is Canadian, isn't he? Although he seems to be.
Well, he was based in Canada when
seems
he started
to be
Vice.
In America now,
but I mean, Proud Boys is a big one.
Proud Boys started by him.
And Proud Boys have a big presence here, and people remember in Eastern Canada last summer at the statue of Cornwallis in Halifax.
Yeah.
Indigenous people having a cleansing ceremony then, and these Proud Boys rolled up and like, oh, you cannot cleanse Cornwall, or whatever they did. Anyway. And then, you had Faith Goldie. Doug Ford takes a picture with Faith Goldie, and then it's like days for him to like do any kind of like half-hearted denunciation. You have Jason Kenney, who's like white militia people are showing up at UCP events, and he's kicking out people in his party who are extremists.
Which is weird, because he was Mr. Multiculturalism when he was with the...
He was the conservative brand ambassador to minority communities. And he did good work on their behalf. And he certainly brought a lot of minority people into the conservative party, to his credit. But now what we're seeing is that any conservative party, it seems, is being co-opted by white nationalists. Movements as as a way to sort of put on an overcoat of legitimacy, it seems. And I think conservatives who are in the business of smaller government, low taxation, law and order,
the classic conservative classic hard to believe, old Coke, new Coke. Yeah,
you have to be aware of this, and that if you don't want your party to become something that stands for hate and for fear mongering and for racism and anti-Semitism, queer bashing, any of that, you have to start taking a stand, and you have to start demanding better of your leaders, like Doug Ford, who sees Faith Goldie and goes, oh yeah, come on, we'll take a picture, and then doesn't denounce it for days, even as people are screaming at it, denounce this.
And then Conrad Black jumps in. Oh, it's not so
Conrad,
bad.
The less attention people pay to Conrad Black, the better off we'll all be. And you mentioned the Steve Bannon debate with David Frum.
Yeah.
That should have been canceled right away. After, especially after the pipe bomb, especially after the synagogue, that is tin ear BS from the monk debates. And
sounds like quite the protest.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be
tonight,
but,
right?
So David Frum too, never Trumper, fellow Canadian, appreciate it, but that guy has some blood on his hands.
Oh,
he was
yeah.
one of the architects of the Iraq War.
He's supposed to be like Mr.
Evil guy.
Moderate now. I don't know. He doesn't like Trump, but it's really weird.
I'm not one of those people who's saying that Bush and Cheney should have been thrown away for war crimes. But I will temper.
I will
any support. Fair enough. But I will temper any support for like never Trumpers like David Frum by saying like, dude, you are not the hero of the left. And you still have a lot of explaining to do about some stuff you wrote down back in 2002.
Yeah, strange choices, but...
Anyway, enemy of my enemy, I guess.
Hmm.
Speaking of enemies, Brazil had its runoff election for president last week. The winner is Jair Bolsonaro, who has been called the Trump of the tropics, and that's meant as a compliment. He is a very right-wing politician. He has said even stuff that I think even would be outside of Donald Trump levels of acceptability in Trump-adjusted terms. Like he talked about how he couldn't accept if his sons were gay. He talked about how a woman who was critical of him was too ugly for him to even rape. He's come out in favor of torture. He said that he wished that the cavalry in Brazil's colonial days had done as good a job as the American cavalry in wiping out indigenous people. He said that a moment of weakness for him was siring a daughter after four sons. So women hating, queer hating, indigenous hating, environment hating. He's a great guy.
Yeah. Take Trump, turn it up to about 11. Plus he was in the military too. And some of his like,
unlike Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, he just went to military school. It's different, right? But the something that he said was, well, most of the things he says are questionable at best, but he had this really, I think, probably one of his darker comments was He voted when they impeached Dilma Rousseff back in, that was 2016. He was a member of the parliament there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he voted for it, of course, but he dedicated it in the name of the head of a torture unit from the old regime. Brazil was under a military junta for a long time.
Yeah. And she was a prisoner.
And she was actually tortured by this person.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that isn't just saying she should be impeached for whatever reason. This is your way of saying...
Payback.
Yeah. And that's, like, extra dark.
I mean, so, that's like the rebel scum of, like, we're impeaching you, rebel scum. It's... That's pretty dark.
So it's, you know, he's... It's scary stuff. And funny enough, too, though, like he won 55% of the vote, which isn't funny in itself, but... This is an example. We're going to talk about proportional representation in a bit. They have a mixed system there. Like, he had to get plus 50% of the vote. So this is like a resounding, you know, they have runoffs until somebody wins with a true majority, like a 50+1.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no question as to, you know, he won it clearly. But, you know, this is probably an example where an improved electoral system doesn't necessarily deliver the better result. So I guess a lot of people probably voting for him for the reasons, you know, economically and whatever's going on in Brazil, and law and order, of course, because I mean, Brazil has, if not the worst, one of the worst records of just outright murder. It's something like 66,000, I think was the number I saw, of just murders mm-hmm. in a country of 210 million. So I guess people have gone for the strong man. He's part of what seems to be called the Bullets, Beef, and Bible Caucus. you know, the Holy Trinity, I guess, down there of their certain political view. But of course, and I guess you heard about the stink this week about the CBC. I guess we'll talk about it too much,
yeah,
but the,
yeah,
how
yeah.
the well, this is a potential for investment opportunities. It was like, really, this is what you guys have.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure whether that guy was a contractor or not. I was like, here's the story.
I think
that
he's
we
on
picked.
Staff.
He's on staff. So disappointing. Rather than getting a bit more in depth, but I guess they're so
that
busy.
Was
they're so busy embedding ads for other shows in their news feed. Oops. no, it's true, though. It really is. I wish they'd stop it.
You know,
you hear the marketplace story six times, but this, you know, the stuff that we get on.
We all like Frankie Drake mysteries.
Yes. We didn't start this topic to criticize the CBC at all, but there's room for some work there. And, of course, the internet exploded.
Kim's convenience is a national treasure.
Yeah.
We get it. But, no, yeah, the CBC thing. The fact that they had to go back like three times to try and put a bow on this and it still failed miserably. It's
yeah, the whole...
like what this guy is talking about, and the Guardian's done really good coverage on this, like instead of, as opposed to the CBC, that there is 900,000 people who are counted among the indigenous people in Brazil. That's out of a country of 200 some odd million.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these people too, in Brazil, indigenous people don't have contact with the modern world.
They're some of the last in the world.
They have the most like people in, like that are not part of like quote unquote the modern world in terms of contact, like on Earth. That's like the highest concentration of people who are not in touch. I mean, there are islands in the Pacific where you don't go. Because the islanders have no contact with the outside world and are vastly hostile to the outside world.
Famous shot of the guy shooting the arrow at the airplane or the helicopter was from Brazil, right? So shooting at this plane. Because,
the one that came out earlier this year.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was in Brazil.
That guy is like the last of his tribe. Like and that was like part of like a, I don't want to say stunt, but it was part of an effort by the Indigenous Affairs Department in Brazil.
Yeah.
To try and get attention because they are already so underfunded
mm-hmm.
and lack support. And they're trying to get, like, this is like kind of some of the work we're doing. It's like trying to protect this guy who's like the last of his people, you know, and we should be able to just sort of leave him alone and sort of protect him and protect his lands.
But Bolsonaro's approach will be clear it all out, put in a palm tree plantation or soybeans or whatever.
Bolsonaro has said straight up on the record, he does not want to leave 1 centimeter of land for indigenous people. In the year 2018,
yep.
I do not want to leave 1 centimeter of land for indigenous people.
And adding to that, if you're pretty much burning down the lungs of the world and getting rid of them. It's not just Brazil that's going to be screwed, right?
Well, this is why people around the world should pay. I mean, Trump is, yeah, he...
Trump is one thing.
He sucks a lot of attention up, but he, you know...
Trump's almost got nothing on this guy.
Trump, yeah. Well, it remains to be seen how, if this guy can be effectual, because Trump has proved that he's moderately effectual at best. It tends to be the people around Trump, like Ryan Zinke and Jeff Sessions, who managed to do the heavy lifting. Can this guy put together a similar team to be as effective to start putting in policies to, like, clear-cut the Amazon, to repeal environmental laws, to repeal protections for indigenous people? That's a real question mark still.
Yeah, and how much power does he have? Will he consolidate that power? And will it be Putin style, or like Trump, a wannabe, or does their parliament have the system in place where it's the president doesn't necessarily have those powers, and it's So that remains to be seen.
I mean, that's the big question mark, and I think everybody's
right to
be concerned.
Military strongman usually leads a certain direction, especially when he's not hiding it. It's not as if this was a surprise. Sorry, I'm not going to say it. I had a word on the tip of my tongue. It's so hard. But yeah, so yeah, that's what remains to be seen. But if he, this guy with the out of the military, he's got a scoop or two of hate.
I mean, he's two steps away from
dictators, jail the lefties, pro torture, everything that we listed off the top.
He's steps away
no redeeming qualities, and yet he won with a majority.
Yeah,
you gotta wonder.
He's two steps away from basically offering, money for people who, will bring in scalps. I mean, that's pretty much the only place he's left to. That's the only right wing ground he's left to cover. It is scary, and he's talked about he hasn't talked Trump about withdrawing from Paris because Brazil has put into place some fairly ambitious goals, and it's actually been very protective. 12% of Brazil's land is protected for indigenous people. So, I mean, again, indigenous people make up less than 1% of the population, but 12% of Brazil's land has been sort of earmarked for the protection of indigenous people. So he hasn't said he's going to, bail on Paris yet, but he says that he doesn't want to give up any, authority to international monitoring or even indigenous people when it comes to the areas in the Andes, to the areas along the Brazil coastline, or to the rainforest, which pretty much is Brazil.
Yes.
So he's already setting a standard that's I'm in favor of having total control for me and doing what I want, and you're going to be okay with that, which is not an ideal place to start negotiating from.
And I didn't know this. Just quickly, during the research, that he got stabbed. Did you hear that? He was stabbed in the abdomen while he was campaigning.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously an assassination attempt already. Who knows what else?
And that kind of stuff only sort of emboldens people like Bolsonaro.
Yeah, because in some ways he'd probably get a sympathy vote somewhere, right?
He'll get sympathy vote, but he can go out there and say, look, my ideas are so bold and so dangerous. They're trying to kill me already.
Yeah.
Which is why violence doesn't work. You can't make martyrs out of these people.
No.
But you can protest them and get out in the streets, and I'm sure we'll see a lot of that in the days to come. We're not done with environmental news yet. We are going to come back and talk about rewriting the Monster Mash to make fun of your political opponents and other cool climate change stuff.
Whoa.
And then we'll talk about electoral reform in BC. So it all comes together on this week's show, which was totally planned. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Dressing room, she loosened his grip and started. Tell me your story if you feel so inclined. He was a mess of monstrous eyes.
That was a taste from Elvis Costello and the Imposters. New album just in the station. It's called Look Now. I played that for completely selfish reasons because I wanted to hear what it sounded like, deviating from the normal instrumental thing. So I will admit it. So brand new in the station. His first album with the with them for many, many years, if I understand it right. So fresh stuff. I love playing fresh stuff. Look, keep it fresh here on CFRU 93.3 FM.
Yes, our mandate is the newest
freshness.
Music.
100%.
All
new
hits,
music.
Open sources.
Oh, God, my favorite show, yeah.
Open sources. Also, it was bold for you to not play the Monster Mash. It was a graveyard smash.
I actually really, really wanted to play the variation of the Monster Mash that we saw this week. I don't know. Okay.
All right.
You start.
Tee up. Scotty's best friend for life, Sam Oosterhoff. They repealed the Ontario government for the people repealed cap and trade. The cap and trade law was passed by the Wynne government. They did that this week to thunderous applause, but not before Sam Oosterhoff got up and did a, shall we call it a spoken word performance of a spin on the Monster Mash. That mocked Kathleen Wynne in Cap and Trade and would have surely gotten him beaten up if he had done that in a high school that he didn't go to.
Yeah, he's like he's a meme waiting to happen. The high school he didn't go to is exactly it. I'm surprised that album or that song was allowed in his house, actually. So I was wondering whether somebody had written it for him or he came up with that himself. But of course, it's all on the record now in Hansard and Bings. Is it Hansard at the provincial level? I believe so.
What's that?
The notes. The note-taking. The record. The written record.
Oh, right.
Parliament, we go and...
Right.
I'm sure MPP Mike Schreiner will be able to correct us on that. you know, the guy sits and writes everything down. Anyway,
hanging out with Mike in a couple of weeks.
Ask him. I believe it's Hansard. At least it is in Ottawa. Doesn't matter, but it's on video too, which is...
And on Twitter.
Talk about meme waiting to happen.
Yeah, I'm sorry, this is the kind of silliness that does not make me personally want to be a conservative supporter. Like, it's not just about, voting against policy they don't like. It's about freaking tap dancing on Kathleen Wynne's political grave.
Yeah. There's a time for levity, and that was not the time. I know it's Halloween.
I mean, I hate when they applaud during question period. It's just
kills time.
Silly. It kills time, and it's silly.
Are they still doing the clap out?
Yes.
Yeah, they're still doing that shit.
And it's not. It's not just the conservatives. It's the NDP too. Every time Andrea Horvath gets up to ask the first question, there's thunderous applause, like she just defeated Maximus in the gladiatorial arena or whatever. It's silly. It's stupid.
They just have wrestling in the middle of the floor, right?
Partisan for partisan's sake instead of treating it as like we're actually here to hold the government to account about some things. All right, that's out of my system. But
still simmering down below.
The more dangerous thing, though, is that there's no plan on the table. They repealed this plan, which the Independent Financial Accountability Office has said is going to mean $3 billion out of the CalPERS at a time that Vic Fedeli is saying we are $15 billion in debt. Cool. But there's no plan. And Mike Schreiner, Guelph MPP Mike Schreiner, proposed like, well, let's have an emergency debate about what's going to take this place. Denied. And that's the frustrating thing about all this, about Andrew Scheer, about Doug Ford, about Scott Moe, Jason Kenney. They know they hate the carbon tax, but they have absolutely no suggestions about what to do to battle climate change.
And adding to that, it would seem that some of the numbers are coming up with being made up. So Doug Ford had that joint press conference with Scott Moe, Saskatchewan Premier from the Saskatchewan Party, and terrible driver. Google him, by the way. But on top of that, that's one for GTalk Nightly, I think. But so they had this joint press conference, and Doug Ford got two of the big numbers completely wrong. One was kind of the amount of the rebate. I think there was some number fudging going on. And also like the average cost per individual what the carbon tax would cost. And Scott Moe was asked about this, like, sort of as an aside. He's like, "Oh, I'm not going to comment on this." So you just have a joint press conference with a guy, and you're not going to comment on this Ontario thing? It's kind of like the old, "Oh, I can't comment on that because it's before the courts." Or I can't take a gift from Kathleen Wynne because I'm not supposed to take gifts. That's another story. But
The problematic part is
from Kathleen.
That, and it's emblematic of politics today. It's, I'm not going to criticize you because you're on my side.
Yeah.
Even though, like, instead of trying to win this thing on the facts, instead of saying, well, Doug Ford was, like, wrong about a couple things, I strongly believe that the better business case is not a carbon tax, but to do option A, B, C. But he won't say that because Doug Ford's on side, whereas previously the premier of the largest province in the country and the most populous province in the country was on the side of Justin Trudeau and doing something about climate change.
So it's become campaigning against Trudeau rather than doing something about climate change, like you say.
Right. The problem is carbon taxation was a conservative idea. And there was a great piece, and I don't say this too often, in the National Post.
Dun, dun, dun. But,
where it said, carbon tax in Canada is like the Affordable Care Act in the United States, where it was a conservative idea taken by liberals as an attempt to sell an action on an important issue to conservatives by using one of their ideas and adapting it, hopefully getting bipartisan support, and then the conservatives completely refute the idea they came up with. It happened with the Affordable Care Act, which is Obamacare, which was initially Romney Care, which was initially a plan by the Heritage Foundation, and it's the same thing with carbon tax, which was supported way back in the 70s by, of all people, Milton Friedman, who is a Nobel Prize-winning economist, also an advisor to Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, not exactly two of the biggest tree-huggers to ever walk the earth.
About as right-wing as you can get. Was that Coyne wrote that? I bet it was.
I think so.
Yeah. So, yeah, but there was a report out that Ontario had hit the bar. I guess in 2014, the target was 6% below 1990 levels. They didn't actually say, but it was probably because getting rid of the coal plants, right?
Yeah.
So something was working, right? We got something that's working regardless of who came up with it. A target was hit, and that target is going to be completely missed. Now, in fact, it'll probably be nowhere near any target ever because there won't be one. It'll just be gone, right? So, and I think last month it was the environmental commissioner said that, not having a plan was, of course, bad for the environment, bad for health, bad for business, and, of course, and taking away the so-called carbon tax program and taking away all things green or anything liberal, anything that smells of previous governments, we're just going to stomp on it. So, and if you have, if you have no plan, but of course, it's Diane Sachs, right, is the environment commissioner. So, of course, I think it'll eventually come to the Conservatives will scream, well, it was a partisan appointment because she was appointed by liberals, and they'll appoint, I don't know, a homeschooled oil magnet with no qualifications whatsoever. No, that's not fair to say, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It'll be like they'll get somebody in that job who will be on side, let's say, because, she'll be unceremoniously let go on a Friday. And on a Monday, we'll see, I don't know, one of the Irvings or somebody from Loblaws or one of the friends.
Well, this is it.
It's... In my opinion. He says so he doesn't get
Galen West and the
ding donged. Yeah,
it just seems to me that we've been kind of given a deadline now. The IPCC has said it's 12 years and we're toast. And this is still a new thing. I keep coming back to the fact in the 80s. We had a conservative government here in Canada. There was a conservative government in the United States. And scientists came forward and said, look, there's this thing called acid rain that's eating the tops off the trees. There's this thing called with the hole in the ozone layer. It's being caused by CFCs. It's going to be bad. We need to fix it. And the conservative politician said, okay. A river in the United States gets set on fire. A river gets set on fire. Scientists say this is a problem that needs to be fixed. And Richard Milhouse Nixon, of all cockamamie people, said, okay, we're going to set up this thing called the Environmental Protection Agency. You like the EPA? Thank Nixon. It's the one thing you'll ever thank Nixon for.
Yeah, and these things are forgotten.
These weren't tree huggers.
No.
They're not. And Doug Ford to go out and like, we're going to cut your gas prices and we're going to cut your heating bills. No, you're
yeah,
not.
Yeah, it's the
because we're going to still be paying for this in other ways. We're going to be paying for you to fight this in court, which $30 million has been set aside to do so far. We're going to be paying this in canceled contracts with energy companies, which is going to be $1 billion or more, $3 billion maybe, $4 billion. We don't know. We're going to be paying for this and, somehow.
Yeah, and somebody needs to do a better job of busting the little guy myth in that these people – Ford et al. Have this claim that's like, well, we're doing it for the little guy and you'll save on your gas and you'll save on your hydro bill and you'll save all this. It's that whole, you know, voter as consumer rather than, you know,
right,
your electoral duty and your duty to the environment and to your nation stuff. It's all about buy and sell, right? It's like, well, we're going to give you a deal on this. We're going to give you a deal on this. I don't expect anything less from a sticker salesman, right? Or,
well, it's or all the sales
failed
act
farmer from Saskatchewan.
It's all the sales act because he puts out this Ontario News Now piece where she's like,
which is not a real news agency, by the way.
Yeah, Guelph Local.
Pow! We need that.
We do need the zing. Yeah. Bing, 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 bing. Anyway. They put out this Ontario News Now piece that Doug Ford has cut gas prices. Isn't that awesome? It's like, no, the winter gas is now in the pumps, and the winter gas is cheaper than the summer gas because they have to put in additives into the summer gas to make sure it doesn't evaporate as fast. That's why gas is cheaper in the winter. Also, people do less traveling in the winter. But these are factors that have absolutely nothing to do with Doug Ford and Ontario's government for the people.
But taking credit for it anyway, right?
Right. Meanwhile, Meanwhile, Ron Phillips is saying next week or next month we're going to come out with our climate change plan. But they've already ruled out carbon tax because they're fighting that in court, and they've already ruled out cap and trade because they just defeated that. So what's the option for fighting climate change? He said there's going to be a direction for fighting climate change, but you just took the two biggest, most obvious things off the table, which is carbon tax and cap and trade. So what are we going to do? Rod Phillips.
Right, turn to Rob from X of Environment Canada, you mean? It just shows up. Rob Phillips.
No, that environmental minister, Rod Phillips.
Oh, so I got the wrong Phillips. Who's it? I'm confusing my Phillipses? My Felipes? I don't know.
But my point is, like, what's his plan? Because the two most immediate ways to sort of battle the, I mean, the other option is to say to polluters directly, okay, here's your amount and you can't go more than that, which seems like a vastly unconservative idea. Because, carbon tax was the conservative idea, supported by a conservative federal leader named
Michael
Chalmers.
Yes, but now it's a liberal plot. We could go on and on about this, but I think we should leave it there because it's gonna bounce.
I don't want to leave it on liberal plot, but I think the big goose egg is
liberal plot.
What is the option they're going to bring forward? Because they've already eliminated the two first most immediate, most easiest options to combat the rise in carbon. And that was the other thing I was going to mention, that Doug Ford came out and said everything's made of carbon. Well, thanks, Doc. Thanks, Dr. Ford.
Oh, my God. I missed that one, but I'm kind of glad I did. It's David Phillips, by the way, from Environment Canada.
All right. Well, there you go. Speaking of deeply confused people, they're running the referendum in BC on electoral reform. People started receiving their ballots last Monday as we were voting here. They started getting their ballots in the mail. It's all mail-in ballot for this one. Tomorrow, if you haven't gotten your ballot, if you're listening to this in BC and you haven't gotten your ballot by tomorrow, you should probably call someone at Elections BC because everyone should have their ballots by tomorrow. People in British Columbia, to recap, are being asked to vote on two questions. One, should they keep first past the post or go to a proportional representation? And two, if you are wanting to go to proportional representation, what kind of proportional representation do you like? And there are three options.
So much choice.
Dual member proportional, which is kind of an MMP, but basically it would be bigger districts where you would elect one sort of person to represent the party, another person to represent the district. You'd have rural-urban proportional, which would have single transferable ballot in urban areas and MMP in rural areas. And then there's mixed member proportional, where you would have two votes, one for your representative and one for what party you think should make up government, and there'd be assigned seats, and the exact details of how this would work would be come out in the wash after the referendum. But I think the interesting thing that has come out of this week is that people seem to be arguing over the merits of first past the post and PR instead of arguing about what are the benefits of the systems and maybe really trying to explain to people what the systems are and what the pros and cons of each system are, which I think is probably going to be more important to people in the long run.
Yeah, the systems are all being written off by the no side as too confusing. It's so confusing. I don't know what's going on. I would think if there's anywhere in Canada that this is going to, you know, gain a toehold is BC, because mm-hmm. they had that Citizens Committee a few years ago that beat it into the ground, but had massive discussions with people drawn from the whole province in quite a wide range to say, well, should we do this? And I think the general agreement was, yes, the electoral system needs improvement. So
yeah, if the if that referendum had been done according to these rules, they would have had electoral reform in 2005. But mm-hmm. the mandate was a supermajority.
It's that long ago, yeah.
So it was like
which is 2/3.
50.
Right?
Yeah, I think it was just 60%, but it was like 57.5% that voted in favor. So they just missed it by that much.
So it's quite possible this, and is this supermajority as well? This ballot?
I think it's 50+1.
But yet the choosing the three different systems is ranked, which is interesting,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
That it's like, of these three, which would you prefer? So there's lots of homework to be had, and there's lots of little videos making the round on how this works and how that works, some complicated, some not. It would seem that Premier Horgan and Wilkinson, I can't remember his first name, from the Liberals are going to have a debate
down.
On what, November the 8th?
Andrew Wilkinson.
Horgan voting for the – or campaigning for the pro side, I guess, and Wilkinson for no.
Yeah. which – works out, makes sense.
And one of the other no arguments is, to stick with the no side for a minute, is that they're saying that, well, if we do this, there's going to be all sorts of radical parties elected. You know, you're pretty much going to get Nazis having seats. Mm-hmm. Is that fair? But I think statistically shown, they're using the European example, where there are very small radical parties become parts of governments there. I think the numbers kind of show here, if you took, say, I don't know, Faith Goldie as an example with 3%, you know, assuming that wasn't a mayoral race, but some other sort of race for a seat. The concern is that somebody like that, and I guess if she was put on a slate of some kind and proportional was implemented, because one of the systems does seem sort of complicated in that there's several, is it the rural urban one where several combinations are presented, like first choice, second choice, or do you want these two for your first and second choice, or do you want these two? It's not that hard.
That's
when
the rural urban one, which is the most complicated.
But supposedly that was devised in Alberta. Somebody in Alberta came up with that system.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it was a political science student in Alberta.
But again, if you look at it, it's not that – if you take a minute, they're not that complicated. But the fear
–
the fear mongering at least is that, oh, these systems, oh, it's going to – you're going to get radicals. There's going to be – you know, it's going to be completely out of control, it's far from the case, I think, at least in Canada, right?
Right. But I think –
for now.
But I think the common mistake is that the focus is not on trying to explain to people. Like, that's what the debate should be. It's like – if you want to make the argument that this is too hard, that's fine. The no side is for pass the post anyway, and they don't care whether you understand the options anyway. But the focus of the yes side should be, here are the options and what the pros are, what the cons are. You should be aware of this because, yeah, they're not as easy to explain as first past the post, which has long been part of the problem.
And you have to wonder, would the NDP be as for this if it weren't for the Greens propping them up? Because this has been a Green talking point since the very beginning of that party, is like, we need PR. Everywhere in the world where there's Greens, it's like, we need PR.
Well,
so it's
like all great political ideas sort of swim upstream from the fringe parties to the mainstream.
Sure, but
parties,
but they're holding the balance of power essentially, right? So you have to
The Greens made this part of their plank for the agreement of cooperation, mm-hmm. that we have to do this. I think if the NDP had a majority, we probably wouldn't be sitting here right now talking about this. We'd be talking about, you know, something.
Sam Oosterhoff's musical career.
Oh, if only. But it was, he's getting married, you know. So he might now actually know something about sex.
You're the king of the burn today, son. Holy cow.
It's what happens when I stay up all night putting out Christmas. Anyway.
Yes, this fella pulled an all-nighter here. So kudos to you.
Where were we talking about? Electoral reform.
Electoral reform.
The whole Nazi art, it's incredibly disingenuous because Europe, as frequently pointed out, is societally different from where we are in North America, where there's more of a melting pot, where people move into communities, become part of bigger communities, interact more with other people. Like, there's no such thing as a Somali ghetto in Toronto or Vancouver. People tend to move into an area where there are different types of people and they become more secure in their Canadian identity. So there's really no sort of mainstream thirst for white nationalism that exists in Europe. What the bigger danger here is that I think the no side is missing is what we're seeing, and that just addresses what we were talking about at the top of the show, is that the white nationalists are infiltrating the mainstream conservative party and taking that over slowly. And because of that team dynamic we were talking about earlier, the regular sort of center-right conservatives are afraid to speak out because of the anger on the one side, or they want to galvanize that anger to their benefit, or they want to unite the right, and or they want to not turn off anyone who might be a potential voter and might help them secure election or re-election. So that's the bigger problem here. It's not the bigger problem is that we're going to have Nazis in parliament. The problem is going to be Nazis ending up in parliament dressed as conservatives. Or maybe some other mainstream party, but more likely conservatives.
The sheep's clothing scenario.
Wolf in sheep's clothing. That's right.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, to sort of break it down, like we're going to have a UKIP Canada that's going to have like 82 seats or whatever. It's absurd.
It's
highly unlikely. The greater thing is what we're seeing is the other way, where the mainstream conservative party gets co-opted by hardline elements. Which is all the more reason to have a proportional system, because then you can dilute that. And those extremist people go off, create their own party, Maxime Bernier, and and get a few seats. While the conservatives can run their race, and they don't have to worry about having to appease crazies in their party in order to secure electoral majorities.
And that's on the national scale, because we know the Conservative Party in BC is the Liberal Party, which is kind of weird. But that's how that's just how it is.
Right.
To everyone's like, what? But.
Yeah, we just blew some minds.
True story. Yeah.
But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this turns out.
When is the actual vote? Well, not to put you on the hot seat, but
I wrote it down.
The debate is the 8th, but that's not the... Right. Oh, sorry. It's ballots in by the end of the month, right?
Yes,
November
30th. Right.
So by December...
It's a mail-in ballot, so...
By early December, we'll know. Maybe.
Hopefully, I just
unless the mail strike goes Nova, and then they may have to adjust.
Yeah, the other point is that I fear that the yes side is making the same mistakes that the Ontario government made in 2007 when they ran the MMP.
Oh yeah, MMP got slaughtered.
Just saying, we'll figure it out later, and
yeah, don't ever do that.
You want change? We'll figure it out later.
Carbon tax? We'll figure it out later. Well, MMP? We'll figure it out later.
One of those was figured out pretty well.
Kick the ball down the road.
Yeah. Well, we'll kick the ball to next week. Speaking of next week, we will have Ward 6 City Councilor-elect Dominique O'Rourke on the show. And then the week after that, we will have retiring Ward 6 City Councilor Carl Wettstein, who's going to burn some bridges, I hear. No, he might not. But he definitely should.
Full municipal.
He definitely should burn some bridges while we're here, because we do like to get a scoop. Anyway, you can stay connected to us all week long at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire. Go to Twitter, where you'll find us at @OS_Guelph, and you'll be able to hear this and past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I can be found on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com/wow. No. No slash in that.
Enter promo code WOW to get $5 off. Anyway.
WOW 101. Yeah.
DJ sounds good to me. He's going to be here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources. And we'll see you then.
Wow.